Some things get better with age, and apparently that may include cars now. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. When the Consumer Price Index comes out tomorrow, we will get numbers on everything from food and beverages to clothing and used cars. And on the subject of used cars, a quirk. Some models are so popular that older used cars are selling for more than this year's new cars, fresh off the assembly line. An analysis of car prices by the website IC Cars showed that 16 models of 2019 vehicles were more expensive than their newer counterparts in June. Marketplace's Amanda Peacher explains that one.
Jeffrey Koch was shopping for used cars in Nashville after his 99 Honda Civic kicked the bucket last year. He says he has great credit, so...
I'm like, I am surely like just going to get the deal of the century. It's going to be great.
But when he saw prices... Koch strolled into car dealerships ready to pay about $15,000.
Can't really get like an awesome car, even for 15 grand.
There's a simple reason for that, says Carl Brower, executive analyst with IC Cars.
Demand is huge, supply is low.
New car buyers might have to wait 2 or 3 months. Meanwhile, the 2019 model could be right there on the lot.
Even if it's slightly more expensive than the new one, you can drive away with it today.
Brower says if shoppers can wait, they should. That's what Jeffrey Koch in Nashville is going to do.
So if I'm going to be dropping a lot of money, it's going to be what I want.
He says he's going to share his girlfriend's car until he saves up a bit more. I'm Amanda Peacher for Marketplace.
All right, let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is down 0.7%. Dow S&P futures are down in the 3 to 5 tenths% range, with the Dow future down 172 points. NASDAQ futures, on the other hand, are up in the 0.1% range. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 1.339%. Government-funded research and development as a share of GDP in the U.S. has been falling for decades now. Congress, fearful that the U.S. may lose its technological edge in the world, is debating measures to increase the amount of funding that goes into R&D. There's a proposal to double the National Science Foundation's budget, for example. There's another to encourage more semiconductor production in the U.S. But our next guest argues that there is something missing from this conversation, and it is not about funding more experiments. It's about the people doing them, which brings us to immigration policy. Caleb Watney is the director of innovation policy at the Progressive Policy Institute and joins us. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
The U.S. is concerned about losing its technological edge, especially to China, which has thrown incredible effort and resources behind its own research and development. What does U.S. immigration policy have to do with this?
So while today immigrants make up around 18% of the U.S. workforce, they've won 39% of the country's Nobel Prizes in science. They make up over 40% of our STEM PhD graduates. They make up 28% of our science and engineering faculty. They produce 28% of the nation's high-quality patents, and they founded more than 50% of the billion-dollar startup companies in the United States. And so we have a very large and promising, you know, crop of international scientists that are coming to the U.S. every year. But due to our immigration laws, we can actually only keep some small fraction of them, and we end up training them and then forcing a lot of them to go back home overseas. We should be making it as easy as possible for these very highly trained, highly skilled immigrants to be able to stay in the United States, start new businesses, create new jobs, and really help push forward the scientific frontier.
You know, I've spoken to immigrants who've gone to school in the U.S., who've graduated, who found a job willing to sponsor them. But because there are so few slots available, they don't actually get to keep that job. What do you do about that?
You know, maybe the easiest would in some sense be just making our H-1B visa process easier, expanding the slots, making it easier for startups to compete. But all of that are temporary visas. And to really make them feel at home in the long term, you have to increase the number of green cards. There was actually a pretty promising proposal in the Biden immigration bill that would exempt any STEM PhD students who are graduating from U.S. universities from the green card cap, which would basically mean they would have an easy way to apply and potentially stay in the United States if they meet all the requirements. As maybe a secondary path, we should be making it easier for many of them to be able to launch their own startups. And so that's another thing that we could do through Congress, is just create a statutory visa program that would allow startup founders to be able to come to the United States and create new jobs.
Does bringing in or retaining more researchers from abroad in any way undercut the ability of U.S.-based researchers to flourish? Does it undercut wages for postdocs or in some way diminish opportunity for U.S.-based scientists?
Absolutely not. You know, this really isn't a question of where should the funding go. Oftentimes, in the case of international immigrants, we just need to give them legal status. And giving them legal status in no way diminishes the number of, you know, STEM fellowships that we can be giving to native-born Americans. And actually, in many ways, these international students are oftentimes paying higher tuition rates, which actually means in some ways we can cross-subsidize, we can offer more scholarships by allowing more of these international students to come and study in the United States.
If the U.S. continues to shut the door to the scientists that train here, what are the consequences of that long term?
I mean, it would really be closing the door on how the United States has sort of advanced in the past, but it's also that we're facing sort of renewed international competition over this population. So you saw this with the United Kingdom. Both Australia and Canada have been very actively trying to recruit engineers and startup founders. Canada for years has been putting up billboards in Silicon Valley saying, hey, are you having trouble hiring, you know, your skilled international engineers? Come launch in Canada. We are going to make it really easy for you to do all that you want there.
Caleb Watney, Director of Innovation Policy at the Progressive Policy Institute. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.